Jewish Marriage Part 2. So just before we continue today with the talking about what's going on in the wedding ceremony and going through that in a little bit of detail, I just wanted to make two points that were relevant to yesterday's discussion. The first point was an apology to Mr. Shlomo over here, because you mentioned the Rashi, and I'm like, oh, there's no such Rashi. Well, I said that very smugly, because I had the Rashi in front of me, and I was looking at the wrong place. So that's why I said there's no such Rashi. But if you look, Rashi actually does say what you were saying, Shlomo. Rashi says, by V'chivshua, and it says that man should be fruitful and multiply and conquer the world, which we were saying means to, like, you know, occupy different parts of the world and spread themselves out. So he says that Rashi brings an exegetical interpretation that says V'chivshua is written V'chivshua as if to say, and he should conquer her. That's one thing that Rashi brings out. We actually saw that there's a commentary that's ascribed to Rashi on the Medrash Bereishis Rabbah, which is debatable whether Rashi wrote that or not. But he explains that when we say that women are exempt from the mitzvah, from the commandment of procreation, because it says v'chivshua, which has sort of a military conquest sort of connotation, so it wasn't talking about conquering the world per se, but conquering each other. So Rashi on Bereishis Rabbah says, you know, of the two people, of the man and the wife, in that sort of relationship, in that paradigm, who's conquering whom? It's really the husband that's sort of conquering the woman, so that's why he's obligated in the mitzvah, not the woman. So that's sort of going with that approach from yesterday. That's one point from yesterday. The second point was we were discussing something. Okay, it's a little bit complicated if you didn't hear it yesterday, but I'll try to say it briefly. Actually, no, we'll skip that point because I think it's getting too much into it. Fine. So today we're going to talk about the different two main stages of marriage. The Jewish marriage comes in two stages. So we're going to talk about those two stages, and we're going to look at through the Art Scroll Siddur. We're going to see the marriage ceremony, and we'll go through that and explain what's happening over here. We'll see exactly what's happening at each stage and what each thing means. So we'll start from the Rambam, Maimonides, in the beginning of his laws of Ishus, his laws of marriage. So the Rambam puts it down very nicely. The Rambam begins like this. He says, "Koydem matan Torah, before the Torah was given at Mount Sinai, haya adam pegeh isha b'shuk, man would meet a woman in the marketplace, imratzahu v'hi lisa isa. If he and she both agreed that he would marry her, machnisa l'teich beisa, he could take her into her house, into his house, uboyala, and he can consummate his relationship with her beinoy levinatzmai, privately, without anyone else there. Vatehi lo leisha, and she's his wife, right? That's sort of what we would call nowadays in colloquial terms like girlfriend boyfriend. You decide yes, okay, so you can do whatever you want, right? Kevin Shanasa Torah, once the Torah was given at Mount Sinai, Nitztavu Yisrael, the Jewish people were commanded, Shem Yirtzai Ish Lisa Isha, if a man wants to marry a woman, Yiknoisa Tchila Bifnei Edim, he has to, quote unquote, acquire her first in front of witnesses. Right? V'acharkach Tihi Eloi Leisha, and then she can be his wife. Shinamar, as it says in the Torah, in Deuteronomy, it says, Kikach Ish Isha Uvo'a Eleha. When a man takes a woman and he comes on her, comes upon her, means he has relations with her, right? So that's the Rambam says that originally it was all the relationship between a man and a woman is you decide that you're going to be together and you're just, well, you can just move in together and everything is okay. But then when the Torah was given, the Torah says that you can't just do it like that. It has to have some more formality to it. There's something more to it. It requires, let's say, a greater degree of commitment, a greater degree of responsibility. And so what the Torah requires is that you have to, what we call, acquire her. Yiknoisa. Right? It's called yiknoisa, acquiring a woman, because the first step of marriage is called kiddushin. So kiddushin has sort of... Kiddushin is spelled like this. Kiddushin has the outer trappings of what looks like a business deal, right? It looks like a business deal. What is kiddushin? So Rambam explains. V'likuchin elu, these takings, this acquiring, Mitzvahs Esei Shel Torahim. It's a positive commandment of the Torah. That's subject to controversy. We'll see that in a few moments. Uve'echad Mishleshet Dvarim Elu Ha'isha Nikdis. In one of three ways, a man can, quote-unquote, acquire a woman. Bekesef, with money, or bishtar, or with a document, or bibia, or through consummation in a physical way. Right? So these are the three ways. Bibia, bishtar, bishtar. Fine. This is what the Rambam says. So what it is, basically, it looks like a business deal. The husband, he gives the woman something, and then she sort of allows or consents or acquiesces to sort of be acquired by the man, right? So he gives her either money or the value of a certain value of money, something that's worth a certain value, a shtar, a document, or he has relations with her, right? So he gives her something, right? He's giving her a certain physical pleasure in that case, right? He gives her something and then she agrees to be married to him. Yes, sir.
Is that like a formal act, if you had just relations with someone without it being a formal act, like saying, like, I'm acquiring you through these relations, would you be technically married?
What do you mean?
Say if someone were to sleep with someone.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, I'm acquiring you through this means.
Right, so that's nothing. That's just having fun or whatever. Right. This is a formal act. You know, I am doing this with intent to start the marriage process, to do kiddushin. Right? Kiddushin is what we call the first step of the marriage process. It has to be done in front of witnesses. It has to be done both the man and the woman.
In front of
afterwards, in front of witnesses, not the actual physical pleasure.
Well, the money, if you're giving money or you're giving a document, it has to be done in front of witnesses. And if you're doing it with the physical consummation, so you wouldn't do the actual act in front of witnesses, but you would be secluded, and there would be witnesses that you were secluded.
I see.
Like you go into a room privately, and there's two witnesses that see you going into a room privately.
Okay.
Right? So it has to be done with witnesses. It looks like a business deal. It's like an official thing. Right? Now, Gemara actually says that the Gemara says that you're not supposed to start the kedushin process with what's called bia, with sexual intercourse. That's not what you're supposed to do. That's considered, promiscuous. It's considered loose. We don't do that. So even though it says technically you could acquire a woman with bia, but you don't with sexual intercourse, we don't do that. So we only do with kesef and shtar. Nowadays, basically what we do is specifically with kesef, which is with money or something of a monetary value.
So like, what if you really like her, but you're broke?
Yeah.
So then you can't be with her?
Well,
or is it like three prutim or something?
So right, so the minimum value that works to make a kiddushin is what's called a pruta. And the value of a pruta is very cheap. It's like maybe like half a shekel or something. It's just, in a way, it's sort of token, in a way, but it's but you are showing that you're giving her something of that's at least of some value, right? Or you can just do a document, right? Nowadays, the custom is that you give a ring. Right? There's different halachas about exactly the ring, because you don't want her to think that it's worth more than it actually is. So like, it's supposed to be a ring that doesn't have a stone on it. If it has a precious metal, if it has a precious gem on it, so she might think it's worth more, and then she only has intention to be acquired in kedushin based on her misassumed value of the ring. So you have to have like a ring that's just a straight, simple metal ring that has at least this value. That's the prevailing custom, is that you do kedushin with a ring. There's different reasons that are given why you do kedushin specifically with a ring. The Sefer Chinuch says that the reason why you do kedushin with a ring is because the ring, you wear it and it's with you wherever you go, and then you remember that you're married to this guy, so you won't start, flirting or talking to other people in a way that might lead to something forbidden, because it's always with you and it serves as a reminder. That's the idea of the ring. Another idea of the ring is that we said yesterday that a person who lives without a wife is he lives without a wall. Right? That's one of the things we said yesterday in the list. He's living without a wall. What does it mean that he's living without a wall? So a wife sort of protects a person from different types of averas that he might be tempted to do, different types of sins that he might be able to do. So she serves as a wall to protect him from that. So the ring sort of goes around the finger in that way. It's like a wall that that encircles the finger. So just like the woman is sort of the figurative wall that circles around the man. So that's like the idea of the ring. Others actually point out an interesting thing, that the word Kiddushin is equal in gematria to the word for ring in Hebrew. The word for ring in Hebrew is a tabas. Right? Take that. You have a calculator with you, somebody? Everybody does, right? Right? You have 100 plus 10 plus 4 plus 6 plus 300 plus 10 plus 50. Right? Those are the numerical values of those letters. It's 480. And then you have 9 plus 2 plus 70 plus 400 is 481. But in gematria, you're allowed to be off by one. That's the rule.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's a. It's called im hakolo, with the kolo. So it's like 480 plus one because there's one word. So it's 481, and then this is, you know, the letters equal up to 481. So it comes out the same. So the word ring equals the word kiddushin in gematria. So you give the ring, and then you say to her, you know, formula that you're formally acquiring. You say, "Hare at mikudeshesli, you are mikudeshes to me." Right? I'm doing kiddushin, so you are mikudeshes to me with this ring, betabazu, with this ring, kedas Moshe v'Israel, according to the religion of Moshe and Israel. Yes, sir.
Is there like a kneeling like there is in like Western culture?
No.
What does the proposal look like in
Jewish? See. Okay, so let's back up for a moment. We're actually not technically talking about a proposal, because at this point we're actually talking about the stage of marriage. Right? Before this, there's something before kiddushin. Let's say in modern terms, there's something that we call shidduchim, and shidduchim is basically deciding that you're gonna get married, and then nowadays kiddushin is the first stage of getting married. Shidduchim is it's like whatever. I mean, in our circles, more or less, it's like you go out on a date with a girl, and you after a few times you decide, you're gonna get married, not gonna get married, and it's very similar to the way they do it in the Western world. It's not anything special. It's just an agreement that you're going to get married. Kiddushin is the first stage of actually getting married. When do we do all what we're talking about right now, about giving the ring? So we actually do that at the wedding. It's not something that you do beforehand. But in the time of, let's say, the Gemara, in the time of the Mishnah, so Kiddushin was actually stage one of marriage, and stage two of marriage would be separate. Right? You would do Kiddushin, and then afterwards you would do the second stage of marriage. Kiddushin, if you look in like the Artscroll Mishnayos or the Artscroll Gemara, so they consistently translate Kiddushin as betrothal, which is a fancy English word that nobody uses nowadays, but it really means that you're officially saying that you're going to get married, which is not quite true, because that's not what Kiddushin is. What is Kiddushin? We're going to speak about it in a minute, exactly what Kiddushin is and what it causes.
Didn't they wait a year or something?
Right, the Gemara says that the custom used to be that you would do Kiddushin to a girl, to a woman, right, and then you would wait a year, and then afterwards you would finish up the marriage with the second stage, and then that's when you would be fully married. Mm-hmm. So Kiddushin is sort of, you could call it like half married. Yeah, what's your question?
Some people do a Shtar Tanayim and engagement. Is that considered?
Shtar Tanayim is because of Shidduchim. The Gemara says that, just like we said, that if a person does kiddushin through intercourse, so that's considered pritzus, that's considered a breach of modesty, and the Gemara says you can even get lashes for doing so. So the Gemara also says that you can't just go over to a woman in the middle of the marketplace and do kiddushin to her. That's also called a breach of modesty. What you have to do is decide beforehand that you're going to marry her. right? And that's what we call shiduchim, that you decide beforehand that you're going to marry her. Now, some people have a custom that just deciding beforehand is not enough. You also have to write a formal document that says that you're going to marry her. That's called tnaim. So I think in general, here in Eretz Yisrael, so they usually, most people do write a tnaim, this document that says that you're going to get married to her before when they originally get engaged. And in America, they actually don't write such a document usually until the actual wedding. It's like part of the wedding ceremony is that you sign a document that says that we're going to get married, and then 20 minutes later you actually get married. So like, it's an interesting thing.
And then the marriage is after that year that you wait?
No, nowadays we don't wait the year. That's what they he was saying, that in the time of the Gemara they used to wait a year between Kiddushin and Nisuin. Nowadays we do Kiddushin and Nisuin on the spot, all together.
Nisuin?
We didn't speak about it yet, but we'll get to it. Nisuin is the second stage of marriage.
They should do it tonight and then they break off the engagement. Is it like they were already harshly towards marriage? Or?
Okay, so what does Kiddushin do? The Rambam says, V'kemen sheniknas ha'isha, once the woman is acquired, v'nasas mikudashas, she becomes mikudashas, afal pi shelo nivola, even though their marriage wasn't consummated in a physical way, v'lo nichnasa l'beis baila, and she didn't enter the house of her new husband, harei hi eishas ish, she is considered 100% a married woman, right? V'haba aleha chutz mibaila chayiv misas beizdin, a man, she's considered a married woman, in as much as if somebody else has relations with her, it's considered adultery, and he would be considered liable for the death penalty in the times that they were giving the death penalty. Right? She's considered 100% married vis-a-vis anybody, any other man. That's what Kiddushin does. She's considered 100% married vis-a-vis any other man. V'imrotzo legarish, tzricha get, and if her husband wants to divorce her after Kiddushin, so you can't just say, okay, go home. You have to give her a formal document of divorce. You can't just say, okay, that's it. Kiddushin is a true formal marriage, right? Except that they don't actually act as husband and wife. They don't live together yet, right? She's just sort of, as Arts calls it, betrothed. She's just decided as the beginning of marriage. What does the word Kiddushin mean? That's sort of what I'm trying to get to. What does the word Kiddushin mean? So the root of the word Kiddushin is Kuf Dalet Shin, right? Which is the same root as the word Kadosh, which is holy. So Kiddushin, the idea of Kiddushin, what's the idea of holiness or idea of Kiddushin? It's the same idea. It's separating this from everything else, right? Something that's holy, if you have the Beis Hamikdash is the holy temple. Why is it holy? Because it's different than every other house in the world. This is the house of God. Right? An animal that's consecrated as a sacrifice, your Mekadesh an animal, Makdesh an animal, right? You consecrate an animal to be holy, it means it's separate from everything else. This is going to be a sacrifice, so it's a step above. It's holier, it's separated. Right? The idea of Kedusha is to be separate from everything that's not Kadosh, that's mundane. So this woman, when you do Kiddushin to her, you're separating her from everyone else. She's no longer on the market. She can't marry anyone else because you're already married to her. So she's separated from the rest of the world in that way.
But she still has to agree to the Kiddushin.
Well, of course, yeah. When we talk about Kiddushin, like we said, it's like a business deal. I give you something, you give me something. So of course, both parties have to agree.
It's the deal with you and the woman or with you and her father?
Depending on her age. Nowadays we don't marry people that are very young, but in the times of Tanakh, at least the times of the Bible, so the father had the right to marry off his young daughter. Now, if she was younger than 12, so you would be between you and her father. Mm-hmm. But if she's older than, let's say, 12 and a half, so then it'd be between you and her directly. Mm-hmm. Even in the time of the Gemara, they're still marrying people that young. What was I going to say? There's other words, like the word, actually there's the word Kadesha, which means prostitute, and it has the same root as the word Kadosh, it means holy, and Kiddushin, because she's separate, and she's also separate. She's separated from everyone else because, for the bad, for nefarious reasons, for bad purposes, but it's also separate.
So condition just means separate.
It just means separate, but it, the primary meaning of the word would mean separate. But then a secondary meaning holy. That evolves from that is holy. That's basically it. Fine. That's the first stage of marriage. It's called kedushin. The second stage of marriage is called. The second stage of marriage is called nisuin. It's spelled like this: nun, samech, vav, aleph, yud, nun. Nisuin. Nisuin is a full marriage. The way you do nisuin is you bring her into the husband brings the woman into his domain. Mm-hmm. The way you do that.
Was that supposed to be a
sin? Sin. It's a sin. Nisuin. The way you bring her, sometimes when the Gemara in Aramaic talks about the verb of doing nisuin, so it'll spell it like this. Nun yud samech tav. Right? Sometimes the Gemara spells it like that, but like in the Mishnah, and when you talk about like the noun of marriage, it's spelled like this. That answer what you were bothered by? Okay. So what is nisuin? Nisuin, we said. Nisuin is when the husband brings her into his domain, and that makes that sort of completes the marriage, and now they can live as husband and wife.
You're saying like the intercourse part.
What?
That's like the intercourse.
So what does it mean that he brings her into her domain? He bring her into his domain. What does that mean? So we have, according to tradition, it means that you do what's called chuppah.
Oh, right?
You do chuppah. So what does it mean? What does chuppah mean? So colloquially, the word chuppah means wedding canopy, right? That the man and the wife stand under a wedding canopy together. Right? So the way it sort of works from a halachic perspective is that underneath the wedding canopy is the halachic domain of the husband, and then when the woman comes under the chuppah, so now she's entering his domain. Right? Chuppah means, chofeh means to cover. So like in this way it means like a canopy. It's a halachic status really. Chuppah means you're doing this stage of nisuin, of marriage, through bringing her into your domain. The canopy thing is just one example of what chuppah means. There's really a dispute amongst the commentators what exactly is chuppah. And one of them is standing under the canopy, which is I guess the most accepted opinion. There's other opinions as well. One opinion is that they stand under, they wear the same talis together. They wear a talis together, that's chuppah. Right? So some people have a custom of wearing the bride and the groom wear a talis together. The people from Yekish descent, the people from Germany.
They both get covered.
They go covered in a talis together. So that they understand that that's chuppah. Or at least they suspect that that's what chuppah might mean. Some people they specifically cover the chuppah, the canopy, with a talis, mm-hmm. in order to get that opinion as well. Others say that, or the others go with an opinion that the chuppah means that like you sort of hold hands as you're going out of the canopy. So it's like, he's sort of leading her. It's like that's what chuppah means. Like she's like following him. Another opinion of what chuppah means is that they do yichud, they do seclusion. Right? Normally, a man is not, an unmarried man and an unmarried woman are forbidden from being secluded with each other. So we, after the whole ceremony at the wedding, so we go and we also do seclusion. Right? The man and the bride and the groom, they go into a private room together, and there's two witnesses that see them going into the private room together, and that's seclusion. Sephardim do not do that, right? But Ashkenazim do that. Contrary to popular belief, what happens in the yichud room? So contrary to popular belief, nothing really happens there. Contrary to popular belief, they just sit there and they probably usually eat.
They eat chicken,
right? Because in general, there's a custom chicken. That
it was chicken.
Chicken
specifically.
It happens. Yeah. the custom is that on your wedding day, both the chassan and kala, the bride and the groom, generally fast on their wedding day. Mm. either because it's a special time to do tshuva and a person's sins can be forgiven, or because we want to make sure that like neither of them is drunk, that they're in the proper state of mind when they're doing kiddushin and when they're doing the marriage. So therefore, like we make sure that like, they didn't eat, so that you wouldn't say that oh he was drunk when he said that.
Oh, that's why
after sure it's in a proper state of mind, though, because usually like the hungry's are like, okay, let's get through this very quick.
That's one way of looking at it.
But that's why they eat right afterwards, usually.
Yeah. So the yichud room, nothing really happens. But the idea of yichud is that because they're secluded and something could happen, so now they're already treated as husband and wife because
it's
they're
very hard to get out of and into, back into a wedding dress.
Oh.
Have you tried it before?
it makes sense, though. I guess.
Me personally, yeah.
But that's why they switch the dress. They usually have like more than one dress, yeah.
I don't know.
No?
So why break the glass?
That's sacred lechorban.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Part of nisuin, part of this stage of nisuin, says that kala blei bracha asur al baila kinida, a woman, a bride, without having without doing the certain blessings that you say when you get married, she's forbidden to her husband like a nida, like a menstruating woman. Mm-hmm. It's just like she's forbidden to her husband, so this bride, which you didn't say the blessings with, she's forbidden to her husband. So we're going to discuss these different blessings that you say. There's seven blessings that are part of the Nisuan process. We're going to go through all of them, at least in some abbreviated form. And these are the blessings that they're known as Sheva Brachas. If it's a first marriage for both the man and the woman, so for 7 days after the wedding, so every time they have a meal together and there's 10 Jewish men there, so then they say these seven blessings as well. But by a wedding, you need 10 men, and then you can say these blessings, the blessings of the Sheva Brachas that make up the Nisuin. Fine, so I think at this point, we're going to look at the Art School Siddur inside, and we're going to follow what's happening in the marriage ceremony. So if everyone has an Art School Siddur, you could look at page 202. You got it? So the marriage service starts on page 202. So the first paragraph over there in the marriage ceremony, the marriage service, is that when the groom comes down to the chuppah, so there's a special blessing that the chazan says, you know, that they welcome the chazan, they welcome the groom, and they give him a blessing that Hashem should give him a bracha. And then when the bride comes, so the chazan, the guy who's making, you know, with the nice voice and the singing or whatever, so he'll sing another thing in honor of the kala, and he'll say also again that Hashem should bless them. Mm-hmm. Right? And then, okay, fine, so that's just like the introduction. Then comes the kiddushin. Right? One of the biggest honors that you give to somebody at a wedding is Misadar Kiddushin. You give it to like the biggest rabbi that you have a relationship with, so you give it to him. He's the guy, he's Misadar Kiddushin. He's the guy sort of running the show. He's in charge. Right? Not necessarily the MC, but he's the one who he's gonna do at least the brachas for Kiddushin. Right? Yes, sir.
Strictly speaking, if there is no rabbi at all,
yeah,
two people can still get married?
Can.
Like with just regular people?
Yeah.
Okay.
But the custom is to have somebody who knows the halachas,
yeah,
to be Misadar Kiddushin in case any issues come up, and also to make sure that everything goes smoothly. Right? So the first bracha is the bracha that you're going to do before Kiddushin. Right? Actually, the first bracha is Bar Pri HaGefen. So you hold a cup of wine and you make a Bar Pri HaGefen. Because whenever we make a special bracha, so we make the bracha especially special with wine, with Bar Pri HaGefen. Just like you make Kiddush Friday night, you have Bar Pri HaGefen, and Kiddush is the same thing as Kiddushin. Right? Kiddush is separating Shabbos from the rest of the week, and Kiddushin is separating this woman from the rest of the world. So it's the same idea. So you do it on a cup of wine. So you have a cup of wine, and you make the Bar Pri HaGefen. The Misadar Kiddushin makes Bar Pri HaGefen, and then he says this funny bracha. It says, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, blessed are you Hashem, our God, King of the Universe, Asher kidshanu b'mitzvayisav, that he sanctified us with his commandments, v'tzivanu al harayis, and he commanded us regarding the forbidden relations. V'aser lanu es harusais, and he forbade to us women who are betrothed, who are mekudeshes. V'hitil lanu es hanesuas lanu, and he allowed to us, he permitted to us those women who are married to us, al yidei chupa v'kiddushin, through chupa v'kiddushin, baruch atah Hashem, blessed are you Hashem, b'kadosh amah Yisrael, al yidei chupa v'kiddushin. He who sanctifies or consecrates the people of his nation Israel through chupa v'kiddushin, through chupa and kiddushin. Chupa is nesuin and kiddushin is kiddushin. These are the two stages of what, of a marriage. Oh, beautiful question. Hold on to that question. Beautiful question. That's the first bracha. It's a very interesting thing that we make. Usually, you don't make a bracha. There's a concept that you make a bracha before you go do a mitzvah, right? But you don't make a bracha on not doing an avera, right? You don't say baruch ad Hashem asher kishenu mitzvayisav shaloi ligzal, to not steal, right? You don't make a bracha before not doing an avera, right? It doesn't make any sense. But over here, we make a bracha that, oh, asher kishenu mitzvayisav tzivanu al harayis, on harayis. Harayis is like incestual forbidden relations. Right? So before you get married, part of the bracha is you make a bracha of it's using the same formula as a brikas mitzvahs, as a bracha that you do before a mitzvah, but it's sort of different than other brikas mitzvahs because it's talking about not doing an avera, arayas.
Is this the only bracha that does
that? Oh, this is the only bracha that does that. It's sort of talking about a negative, and then it says, and he permits us to people who are allowed to marry, and then it concludes, it says, blessed is Hashem who sanctifies the nation of his nation Israel through kiddushin and chuppah. It's like, why does it do it like that? So what exactly, how would you categorize this bracha? So we mentioned a few minutes earlier in the shir, in this lecture, we said that the Rambam says that doing kiddushin is a mitzvah. Right, so the Rambam understands that this blessing over here is actually a blessing before a mitzvah. It's a birkas mitzvahs that you do before performing the mitzvah of kiddushin. That's the Rambam's view. Others understand that no, this is not a blessing that you do before a mitzvah. If this is a blessing you do before a mitzvah, then the guy who's going to do the mitzvah should say the bracha. But he doesn't say the bracha. It's the mitzvah kiddushin. Right? The rabbi that you're honoring, he's the one who says this bracha, not the groom. So we go more or less with the opinion of the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, says that this blessing is not a blessing that's before a mitzvah, but rather this blessing should be categorized as a blessing of praise. We're praising God. It's just a simple blessing of praise. We're praising God for sanctifying the Jewish people by giving us marriage in a way that other people don't have it. Other nations of the world don't have this two-step process. They just have this, like, you know, we agree, we do what we want, and that's it. And now we're together. But here we have this two-step process. We do kiddushin, and then do nisuin. There's two stages to it, and we're focusing on that. And so that's why we're sort of praising Hashem for sanctifying the Jewish people in that way. That's one point. The second point is what Rabbi Grant was asking. Dov, this is what you were asking. If you look carefully in the wording, so it says he sanctifies his people Israel through the canopy and through kiddushin, through chuppah and through kiddushin. So Dov asked, why is it that the bracha mentions chuppah and then kiddushin? The order is that first you do kiddushin and then you do chuppah. So why would the wording of the bracha reverse the order from the way you do it? What do you guys think?
Well, nowadays you're standing under the chuppah before you do kiddushin.
Oh, so some people say that as an answer.
And also, I know by Sephardim, the groom goes down to the bride and brings her into the chuppah.
Right.
So it seems like that comes first.
So you can answer like that. Even though, you know, what we're doing nowadays is not historically what they've been doing. We only started doing this about 1,000 years ago, even less than 1,000 years ago, 800-900 years ago. We started doing this in the time of Rabbeinu Tam, I believe it was. They started doing the kiddushin and the nisuin together. Before that, kiddushin and nisuin, as you said before, were separated by a year. So like the original bracha was originally kedushin, and then v'chupa, and then they switched it to chupa v'kedushin.
Well, when did they make the bracha?
Yeah.
Well, did they make a bracha in the beginning?
Well, this is the bracha before kedushin. We didn't do kedushin yet. We're doing the bracha before the kedushin. Right. So in a nutshell, I'll tell you an idea from Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, Rabbi Chaim of Brisk. So he basically says that there's an interesting Rambam in the Rambam in the Laws of Kings, chapter 9. Maimonides in the Laws of Kings, chapter 9, goes through the history of the mitzvahs. And the Rambam says that originally Adam was commanded with 6 commandments, right? Avodah Zarah, cursing Hashem, murder, sexual impropriety, stealing, establishing court system. Those are 6 things that they were originally commanded. And then it says afterwards came Noach, and God added the commandment of not eating from a limb of a live animal. So now there's 7. Right? It says, and that's how the world was until Avram Avinu came along Avram Avinu, and God added another commandment of circumcision. And then came Yitzchak, and he added the commandment of Meiser, of tithing. Came Yaakov, and he added the commandment of Gidanasha, of not eating from the sciatic nerve. And it says, and in Egypt, the Amram, the father of Moshe Rabbeinu, he got some extra mitzvahs until Moshe Rabbeinu came along, and we got the rest of the Torah through Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Rambam says the history of the mitzvahs was sort of in this sort of evolutionary process. First it was 6, then it was 7, then 8, then 9, etc. Then Amram got some mitzvahs in Egypt, and then Moshe Rabbeinu got the rest of the mitzvahs, the rest of the 613. So Rabbi Chaim Brisker says, where do we see that Amram got an extra mitzvah? We don't find anywhere that Amram got any specific mitzvahs. So what mitzvah do we see about Amram? So he points to a Gemara in Tractate Sota on page 11, where the Gemara says that this is related to the Parsha. We find that Amram was originally married to Yocheved, his wife Yocheved, and they had 2 children, Miriam and Aaron. And then the Gemara says that they got divorced, because Amram said that if Paro is going to make a decree that all the babies should be killed, it's like, why should I bother being married? So he got divorced from his wife. And then his daughter Miriam, she prophesied that Amram is destined to have a son who's going to save the Jewish people, so he remarried his wife. And the Gemara says that Hoshiva ba'apirion, he seated her, he returned her in an apirion, which is a type of a canopy. And he remarried Yocheved, and then they had Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's where Moshe Rabbeinu comes from. Right? So you see from here that Amram actually performed the mitzvah of chuppah. Right? But what about the mitzvah of Kiddushin? So the Gemara didn't say anything about Kiddushin. When did the mitzvah of Kiddushin come about? So we mentioned the Rambam earlier in the beginning of this year. We said the Rambam says that it happened at Matan Torah, at the revelation at Mount Sinai. So what Rabbi Chaim Brisker proposes is that the wording of the bracha does not reflect the order that you're going to do the marriage in, which would be Kiddushin and then Chuppah. Rather, it reflects the order in which we received those commandments. We got the mitzvah of Chuppah in the time of Amram before we got the mitzvah of Kiddushin, which came at Har Sinai. And therefore, the wording of the bracha is going to put the word Chuppah before the word Kiddushin, even though when you're actually doing it, you do Kiddushin before Chuppah.
And that fits better in the opinion that says it's a bracha of praise.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
If it was the mitzvah, then you would have
Yeah, for sure. Maybe. I'm not sure.
So what is the explanation?
Canopy, yeah.
Well, why is the explanation why...
He's saying that Rabbi Chaim is proposing that they got the mitzvah of chuppah before they got the mitzvah of kedushin. So we're not talking about the order that you're doing it in, because you would do kedushin and then chuppah. We're talking about the order that the Jewish people received those commandments. First they got chuppah, then they got the mitzvah of kedushin. Amram in Egypt got the mitzvah of chuppah, and then afterwards the Jewish people, when they're at Mount Sinai, they got the mitzvah of kedushin. That's what Rabbi Chaim Brisker says.
Why did kedushin come later?
I don't know, but this is what he proves, that Amram had it chuppah in Egypt, and we mentioned before that the Rambam said that they got kedushin at Mount Sinai. Why? I don't know, but this is what he says in the Brisker method of learning. So they don't like to ask why; they only like to ask what. That's one of the
Amram
things that they say.
Amram?
Well, Amram, the father of Moshe
Rabbeinu. When was the bracha made back then? That was made before by chuppah or by kedushin?
Okay. So the next thing is, after this bracha of Kiddushin, The next thing is they actually do the kedushin, right? If you turn to page 204, so it says the groom and the bride drink from that wine that you made the bracha over, and then you give her the ring, and you say this formula of harad mekudeshesli, etc. Right? So now you did kedushin. I was once at a wedding, and the rabbi at this point that he gave her the ring, he said harad mekudeshesli. The rabbi says, okay, now you're engaged. You know, they're like, what? I thought we're married. Now it's like you're engaged. You're beginning the process. And you're about to do what's called nisuin. That's the next thing, which is really the fact that you're under the canopy, which you were under the canopy the whole time, but now the fact that you're under the canopy is a fulfillment of bringing her into your domain, right? And then you're going to do the blessings. But we make an interruption between the kedushin and the nisuin. There's different reasons why we make this interruption. One idea is because the bracha that you did on the kedushin was over a cup of wine and you drank it, and the next set of brachas, the seven brachas that you're going to do for the nisuin, are also going to be done over another cup of wine. Now you can't just drink two cups of wine and make a special bracha over those cups of wine right after each other. So you have to make a separation. That's one way of looking at it. It's a simple, you know, pragmatic, technical reason that you want to make a separation between two cups of wine, so you have to do something to separate between the kedushin and the nisuin. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is that we're doing this separation, this is what the Taz in Eben Ezra Siman Lamed Dalet says. We're trying to stress that there's two stages of marriage. We're trying to stress this idea, this unique idea to the Jewish people, that marriage is not just an agreement, but it's two stages. It's a two-step process. So we're stressing that by making an interruption between the two stages. So we do this interruption. What is the interruption? Depends on your custom. Some people, they have a custom of reading the marriage document. The ksuba is called the marriage document. So they read the ksuba underneath the chuppah. That's just a technicality that you want to interrupt between the kedushin and the nisuin. That's one custom. The other custom is that the rabbi gives a speech under the chuppah between the kedushin and the nisuin. And some people do both.
And Rav Shlomo Karmach
would
play a guitar.
And Shlomo Karmach would play a guitar. When would he not play the guitar?
Yeah. No, especially then.
Shabbos?
He can play the guitar.
I hope. So now you made your interruption. Maybe you'll sing it for us afterwards. Now you made your interruption. Now you're ready to do the seven brachas of the nisuin. We're on page 206. When you do the sheva brachas, not at the wedding, so the last bracha, the seventh one, is the bari priya gefen, the bracha on the wine. But when you're doing it at the wedding, so the bari priya gefen is actually the first bracha. So you could switch 7 and 1 depending on the situation, right? So you have the bracha on the grape juice or the wine. And then you have the bracha number 1. Baruch atah Hashem lekinu melech olam, shakol bara lekvodei. Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe, who created everything for His glory. Rashi in Maseches Ksubos says that this blessing doesn't really have to do with the wedding. This blessing has to do with the fact that there's a congregation of so many people that came here. So we want to bless Hashem and say that everything was created for Hashem's glory, as a way of showing, you know, how appreciative we are of Hashem. And originally Hashem actually served as Adam's best man when he got married to Eve. So we're showing our appreciation to God, and we're saying that this whole communion of here of people that gathered together, you know, all this is just for Hashem. The second blessing is, blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe, Yetzer HaAdam, He who fashioned man. So Rashi says this is referring to the original fashioning of man, the original creation of man, when Hashem first created man, before it was male and female separately, it was male and female together. The Gemara says that it was one entity that was like, if you look from the front, it was a man, if you look from the back, it was a woman. And then God split it later on. So Adam, we said yesterday, is a term that means a man and a woman. Vayikra Shemam Adam. He called their name collectively to Adam and Eve. Together, they're called the Adam. They're called a man. So this is the allusion to the first creation. The third blessing. Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe. Asher Yatzar Esa Adam Betzalmai, who fashioned man in His image. Selam Demus Tavnisai, in the image of His likeness, of His divine likeness, he made him v'hiskin le'mimenu binyan adayad, and he prepared for him from himself, meaning God prepared for man from man an everlasting building, which is a reference to his wife, right? God took his rib and created, built from that. The expression used in the Torah is vayiven, God built from his rib a woman. Baruch Atah Hashem, blessed are you Hashem, Yetzer HaAdam, he who fashions man. So that's referring to the second fashioning of man, which was when Hashem fashioned man, Adam and Chava separately. Right? That's what Rashi says. The fourth blessing is Sois Tasis V'Sagel HaAkara, they should be very happy and exalted, the Akara, the barren one, the one who doesn't have children. B'Kibbutz Bonah HaLesecha B'Simcha, when her children will gather inside her with happiness. Baruch Atah Hashem, Mesameach Tzion Bevanecha, blessed are you Hashem who makes Zion and who makes Zion happy with her children. So this is actually a reference to the rebuilding of Jerusalem, right? The Akara, the barren one, is a reference to Jerusalem, which had been destroyed and rendered, you know, figuratively barren, because the Jewish people were kicked out of Jerusalem in the time of the Romans, right? And so Jerusalem is looked at as the barren city. And so we're giving a special blessing that Yerushalayim should be rebuilt. And it's especially appropriate over here by a wedding, because we say that King David in Psalms 137, so he prophesies about the future exile to Babylon. And he says that the people there, that when the Jews are going to be stuck in Babylon, they're going to want to remember Yerushalayim. And they say that Im lo yales Yerushalayim al resh simchasi, Tidbak l'sheni l'chiki, my tongue should stick to its palate if I don't remember Jerusalem, if I don't mention Jerusalem at my times of happiness. So here is a big time of happiness. We want to mention the rebuilding of Jerusalem. Number 5, Sameach tisamach reim ha'ahuvim, they should be happy, they should surely be happy, those lovable, or those in-lovened friends. Kisamechacha yetzircha began edem mikedem, just like you glanded, you should make glad, say it like this, you should make happy those beloved friends, just like you made happy that which you created, Gan Eden mikedem, in the Garden of Eden, from a time immemorial. Baruch Atah Hashem, blessed are you Hashem, Mesameach Chosan v'Chala, blessed are you Hashem who makes happy the Chosan and Kala. Right, so this is a special blessing that Hashem should make the Chosan and Kala have a happy life. Rashi says it's referring to, you know, throughout their life they should have enough sustenance, enough parnasa, enough bracha, all these blessings that should come to them. I'll tell you a funny thing. We said Began Eden Mikedem, in Gan Eden from time. Mikedem, from time before. Right? The word Mikedem means before. So there's Kedem, I don't know if you heard of Kedem grape juice. It's a famous thing in America, Kedem grape juice. Mm-hmm. So my father actually works for the owners of Kedem grape juice, the Herzog family. So by my wedding, we gave the owner of Kedem grape juice this bracha. So as he's reading it, you see on the wedding video, when he says the word Mikedem, he puts a big smile on his face. So make the chosan and kala happy. The next thing is the last bracha. So under the chuppah, this bracha is considered like the most honorable bracha. Like whoever you honor with saying this bracha, so this is considered like a very honorable position to say the last bracha. And by Shavar brachas, you know, this is a bracha a lot of people like to sing this bracha. And actually Sfaradim only say this bracha by Shavar brachas. According to Sfaradim blessings, you only say one blessing unless the Shavar brachas is done in the same place where the wedding happened. But if it's not done where the wedding happened, you only say this bracha. So this bracha is like the most important of all the brachas. And it's a pity that it's all the way at the end, because we're not going to have a chance to speak about it at great length. But what it says is, blessed are you Hashem, our God, King of the Universe, Asher Bara, Sasein v'Simcha, who created Sasein and Simcha, which are forms of happiness. Chosan v'Kala, Chosan v'Kala, a groom and a bride. Gila, Rina, Ditzah, v'Chedva. These are all different words for happiness. Gila, Rina, Ditzah, Chedva. Right? So we have six synonyms for happiness. Ava v'achva, love and camaraderie, v'sholem v'reyus, and peace and friendship. And then this is a blessing for, Rashi says, this is a blessing specifically that Hashem should make them happy in their union. Whether that means their physical union or the fact that they're joining together now, not in general that for their whole life, but specifically for their new marriage. And then we throw in a request that Hashem should rebuild Yerushalayim into the bracha. It says, Mehera Hashem alekenu Yishama be'ari Yehuda uvchus Yerushalayim. Speedily Hashem should allow be heard in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem. The voice of happiness and the voice of happiness. Again, two synonyms for happiness. The voice of a chasan, the voice of a groom, and the voice of a bride. Call mitzhalis chasanim bichupasam, the voice of people being happy in their chuppah, and the voice of young people in their song-filled feasts. Baruch Ata Hashem, blessed are you Hashem, misamech chasanim v'kala, he who makes the groom happy with the bride. And that's the blessing over here. We said there's a lot of different synonyms in this bracha over here for happiness. Sasan, simcha, gila, rina, ditza, chedva, six different words that express the idea of happiness. I'm not going to get into it right now because we're about to finish. But if you're interested in knowing the difference between these synonyms, you can look in Google. Dov, search Mr. Grant. Search in Google, subtleties of simcha and sason. It's an essay that I wrote for Arsameach's website. It's called Subtleties of Simcha and Sason. And you will find the differences between all six words for happiness. Thank you for coming and thank you for staying. After we're going to have the break. Vacation starts tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. And then Sunday we pick up again. And we're going to start discussing the idea of who you should marry and who you can't marry. So that's what we're going to start on Sunday. Thank you very much. Subtleties of Simcha and Sason. I like alliteration in the titles of my essays.
So like you have five of these?
What?
And this one's like optional also?
Which one's optional?
The Borei Pri HaGefen.
No, they do say the Borei Pri HaGefen. That's part of the benching, really. That's really part of the Birkat HaMazon.
Oh.
Yeah.
Rabbi, so like the word Kiddush, I hear Kaddish all the time.
Kaddish is also the same idea. It's sanctifying the name of Hashem. You're expressing that the name of Hashem is holy. So the words of Kaddish is Yiskadal v'Yiskadash Shmei Rabba. Your name should be your name, his name.
You want the what?
His name should be great and should be sanctified. So that's what the word Kaddish means.
Holy
making holy. Yeah.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.